Tiger!
Order, order.
With a week's adjournment looming and just a fortnight left in the parliamentary year, the Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, decided to gain some extra chamber time for debate on government bills, giving MPs compulsory overtime with this announcement at the end of Tuesday's questions for ministers.
Mr Speaker, I move that urgency be accorded the introduction and passing of the Returning Offenders Management and Information Bill, the introduction and passing of the Social Security Commencement of Benefits Amendment Bill, and the passing of the Local Government Auckland Transitional Provisions Amendment Bill. Mr Speaker, these are three bills that the Government considers should be dealt with expeditiously and therefore in urgency.
While agreeing with the purpose of the legislation, the opposition disputed the need to pass it under urgency. Their week-long refrain, summed up in the words of that old song, "'Tain't what you do, it's the way that you do it, and if you do it in a hurry, you can make mistakes." With the first bill flowing on from last week's fury about Australia's new hard line on deportation, and with the first plane load expected within days, the opposition used questions on Tuesday to determine whether the last-minute rush to pass the legislation had been caused by the government's inaction in developing a policy to support it, extracting this admission from Justice Minister Amy Adams.
I instructed officials to begin developing the policy following the initial advice on the issue in February of this year.
But Amy Adams said she hadn't ordered a start on drafting the bill until 3 weeks ago, after the Cabinet met on Tuesday, October the 27th.
As pursuant to the Cabinet manual, drafting instructions cannot be given until then.
Greens co-leader Materia Touré was disappointed that the bill would be passed without any input from a select committee.
We understand some New Zealanders are returning to New Zealand this week, being deported, and that there's a need for some urgency. So, sir, on balance, we recognise the need for the legislation. We do not accept that it should go ahead without some kind of public scrutiny. We would like to see that. Thank you, Mr Speaker.
But the government wasn't listening, causing Materia Touré and the Greens to abstain from voting on the bill, while Labor advanced a compromise, combining speed and scrutiny with two versions of the bill, as explained by their Shadow Attorney-General, David Parker.
One would have a sunset clause, which would say that it expired after a year. And at the same time, under the same debate, with no more parliamentary time, we offered to cooperate with this at the Business Committee, we said pass a second version of the bill, identical, except that it would not have a sunset clause, and it would not commence until the date of the sunset clause in the first bill, and send that to Select Committee. And then the Select Committee could have, starting tomorrow, heard from the Law Society, heard from the victim impact groups, heard from civil society as to where the flaws are in this bill, because there will be flaws in this bill.
And they will be revealed, no doubt, when the law's implementation comes up for review by a select committee in 18 months, cut from 2 years, the government's only concession to opposition concerns. But it took 16 years for the next bill in the urgency motion to correct a flaw in legislation also passed in a rush in 1998, as observed by Labor's social development spokeswoman Carmel Cipollone when debate on the Social Security Commencement of Benefits Amendment Bill began on Wednesday.
So here we are again, correcting a technical error that was made under urgency back in 1998. And I guess that's the danger of rushing things through.
Nevertheless, despite that danger, the Minister of Social Development, Anne Tolley, explained why the government wanted the bill passed.
There is a technical error in the Social Security Act that allows a benefit to commence on the day that a stand-down period ends instead of the day after. The error occurred as a result of an incorrect amendment on the 3rd of June 1998, but unfortunately was not discovered until May 2014.
And that became the cut-off date for beneficiaries to claim their missed payments, prompting a scathing attack on Mrs Tolley's bill from Labor's Deputy Leader, Annette King.
What they're doing in this is allowing some to claim the day they should have been paid. Is that fair? They're only allowing some to claim from when they found out there was a problem.
Mrs King was also critical of the lack of the usual information that's supposed to accompany legislation going through the House.
Was there any publicity available, inquiry, review, evaluation reports that informed or are relevant to the policy giving effect to this bill? Answer, no. Was there any regulatory impact statement provided to inform the policy decisions of this bill? Answer, no. For the policy to give effect by this bill, is there an analysis on the size of the potential costs and benefits? What's the answer to that, Mr Speaker? It's no. And then, is there advice being provided to the Attorney General on whether any provisions of this bill appear to limit the rights and freedoms affirmed under the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act? No advice has been given.
Annette King and her Labor colleagues were joined by the Greens in voting against that bill, for which the government had the support of New Zealand First, while the third bill, streamlining the hearing process leading to the Auckland City Council adopting one town plan for the whole city, ran into now familiar criticism from Labor's Phil Goff.
This bill, sir, was announced by the Minister on the 16th of September. That's more than 2 months ago. That was plenty of time, sir, for this bill to have been read a first time in mid-September, gone to a select committee, the public given a chance to have its voice heard on the bill, the select committee given the chance to scrutinise the bill carefully for any errors or things that didn't look likely to make the changes that people thought were necessary.
Phil Goff and Labor nevertheless voted for the Auckland Traditional Provisions Amendment Bill, which was opposed only by the Greens, while there was no division necessary for the third reading of the Waitangi National Trust Board Amendment Bill, taking the government's tally for the week to four. And while urgency gained the government an extra 10.5 hours in the debating chamber, there was time for questions as usual, as Rhys Lyon reports.
While urgency usually overrides normal proceedings, the House granted leave for question times to be held as usual. But there were still limits on select committees, with their meetings restricted to mornings between 8 and 9 a.m. and also lunchtimes between 1 and 2 p.m. The urgency motion and restricted times for meetings also saw the original schedule of 22 select committee meetings for the week cut back instead to 15 meetings. One of those was the Social Services Committee, which met during the lunch break on Wednesday to hear submissions on a bill setting up a register of child sex offenders, and heard from Bob McCroskey of Family First, who was in favour of the bill.
The reason we support this is how many horrendous cases of child sexual abuse could we have prevented and can we prevent if parents and caregivers are aware of the risk? And my second question is, should your family, if you have young children or family in your or children in your street, should our families be informed if serious or repeat sex offenders move into the street? My answer is absolutely.
While the bill as drafted would only allow particular government agencies to access the Child Sex Offender Register, Mr McCroskey suggested it should be more widely available.
What I'm suggesting is that it is available publicly, but you have to prove your reason for wanting that information. So if I apply for information about the person who's living next door to my family home where I have three under 10-year-olds and I'm concerned about their behaviour, they've just shifted in, there's shady stuff going on, I believe that if I applied, I'm showing good reason, good intent for wanting to know that information, as opposed for the fact that I've heard that so-and-so's out of prison and I really want to make his life hell and therefore I'm just want to access the information so I can do some vigilante justice.
Family First's Bob McCroskey with that submission on the Child Protection Child Sex Offender Register Bill. Also making time to meet this week, despite the House sitting in urgency, was the Transport and Industrial Relations Committee, which met at lunchtime on Thursday for submissions on the Employment Standards Legislation Bill, the government's response to public concerns about zero-hours contracts where employers don't have to guarantee minimum hours to their employees. Speaking in favour of the bill was Simon Kenny, the head of communications at fast food giant McDonald's.
We support this legislation, in particular allowing employees and employers to negotiate contracts that do not stipulate minimum hours. Further, we believe the bill's provisions will better protect vulnerable employees from inappropriate actions of unscrupulous employers. This is without impacting on the ability of employees and employers to continue to be able to negotiate contracts that best reflect the interests of the parties and the circumstances of individual workplaces.
Simon Kenny from McDonald's there with that submission on the Employment Standards Legislation Bill. Earlier in the week, on Tuesday, the Education and Science Subcommittee continued hearing evidence to its inquiry into the identification of dyslexia, dyspraxia and autism in schools, and heard from the mother of a 15-year-old boy with Asperger's syndrome, which is a type of autism. She quoted from the man from whom her son's condition is named, Hans Asperger, a 20th century paediatrician.
Hans Asperger said, "It seems that for success in science or art, a dash of autism is needed." He also said, "Not everything that steps out of line and thus abnormal necessarily is inferior." So please, can we drop the term autistic spectrum disorder? We don't use the term blindness disorder or deafness disorder. These people are blind, deaf, or in this case, simply autistic. People with Asperger's are more than likely to think outside the box, resist peer pressure, make important discoveries and inventions. So really, how disabled is that?
That was the mother of a 15-year-old boy with Asperger's syndrome making that submission to the Education and Science Subcommittee's inquiry into dyslexia, dyspraxia and autism. And while some select committees made time to meet during urgency, the House's granting of leave for question times to be held as usual saw the government on Thursday facing two sets of questions about a report out during the week from the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment on rising sea levels caused by climate change. First was this from Green MP Eugenie Sage.
My question is to the Minister for the Environment and asks, has he given clear national direction to local authorities to help them protect coastal communities from rising sea levels? If not, why not?
The Honourable Simon Bridges.
Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, the Ministry for the Environment has provided guidance within the uncertain bounds of the science. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has projected sea level rises by the end of the century between 0.28 and 0.98 of a metre. With this range of projections, it's not possible to provide a definite sea level rise to plan for. We welcome the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment's report out today, and we'll be proposing changes to the RMA, the National Policy Statement and the guidance to councils in response to her, we think, very sensible report.
Supplementary question, Eugenie Sage.
Is his government's reluctance to commit to a strong national policy direction on sea level rise another example of this government wanting to shirk the hard decisions and leave them for future governments and future generations?
The Honourable Simon Bridges.
On behalf of the Minister, no.
And Simon Bridges was again called on to fill in for Climate Change Minister Tim Grosser to answer later questions from the Greens' Marama Davidson.
What plans does New Zealand have to help our Pacific Island neighbours, given that the Prime Minister of Tuvalu, Inele Sopoanga, has recently appealed to New Zealand to, quote, stand with us Pacific Islands countries and increase their commitments, end quote?
The Honourable Speaker, Simon Bridges.
On behalf of the Minister, we're already committed to assisting Pacific Island countries to develop their responses to climate change. In Tuvalu alone, we've invested $10 million filling in borrow pits that were dug to build runways in World War II. This has increased Tuvalu's usable land area by 8% and has been designed specifically to account for projected 100-year sea level rise. We've also invested $20 million to support Tuvalu's renewable energy goals, and as a result, Tuvalu's outer islands will get 90% of their electricity from New Zealand-funded solar panels.
Supplementary question, Marama Davidson.
Will those renewable energy options like solar panels that you've just referred to and that the Minister is so proud of still work underwater?
The Honourable Simon Bridges.
No.
Simon Bridges.
That report from Eastline. Also this week, the House paid tribute to the memory of All Black great Jonah Lomu, who died on Thursday, and the victims of terrorist attacks in Paris on the weekend, ending in this waiata led by Māori Party co-leader Marama Fox. Parliament's adjourned for a week back on Tuesday, December 1st. I'm Tom Fruin, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.